A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 34. Galica.
I have a bad feeling about this, Fennec muttered.
Keep it to yourself, Din muttered back, catching a sigh between his teeth before it could slip free and betray his nerves.
Fennec kicked Din in the ankle. Din ignored it. He had a bad feeling about this too, if he was being honest with himself, but he didn't want to voice it out loud. If he said it, he might lose his nerve, and they'd already come all the way out here. Mos Eisley's evening air was cool around them. Turning back now would be... hutunish. Cowardly, Din thought.
It's gonna be fine, Din said, pushing down his own feelings of unease. I'm just nervous, that's all.
The tension in his shoulders, the doubt in his belly, all of that was just... nerves. Apprehension. The bad feeling creeping down his spine, plucking at his nerves like a wishhawk plucked at its web. That was just... doubt. This plan wasn't any more dangerous than some of the others Din had cooked up, executed, and survived. Fennec's bad feeling wasn't proof that the plan would fail.
Focus, Mandalorian.
It was going to be fine. You good here, or do you want to scope out another roof? Din asked, dragging his thoughts back to the matter at hand. He cast a sideways look at Fennec. She was hard to see. Fennec had dressed for the night in all black, and though she wasn't yet wearing her helmet, once she put it on, she'd be almost invisible. She'd foregone her usual orange and black helmet for one that was a single, solid, matte color. She'd even ditched her usual coat, which had orange flashing at its lining, its tails, for a plain black one. In her leather, she looked like a living shadow. The only way someone would spot her was if they looked for her and maybe had some thermal imaging to help them out. Otherwise, Fennec would just blend into the night. Next to her, Din felt almost entirely naked. None of the clothes that Boba had stocked Din's closet with, loose shirts and tunics and pants, clothes for lounging around in bed in or sitting up in the sweet, cool breeze of Boba's rooms, had been proper spacing clothes, so Din had been forced to improvise. He'd gone into some of the abandoned rooms in the back of the palace and had raided old closets and chests, looking for something that an ordinary spacer might wear. Finding something suitable had taken a few tries. He'd eventually found enough odds and ends of clothing to pull a spacer's kit together. A holy shirt that might have once been white, missing a few buttons at the collar. A faded pair of dark blue pants, lined down one leg with yellow. Din had kept his own boots, stripping them of anything that might have given him away as a Mandalorian, though he had kept his Verd knife strapped now to the inside of his wrist instead of tucked into his boot, and his own belt. But he'd pulled on a threadbare black vest over top his borrowed shirt once he'd found a vest in a dusty closet that hadn't been covered in long brown hair. The vest had a pocket sewn into its inner lining that was just big enough to fit the darksaber, which Din had decided to take with him too, just to keep its now familiar weight with him. Din resisted the urge to press it reassuringly into his side. Fennec had assured him, after she'd reached out and straightened up the fall of his unfamiliar clothes, her care freezing Din in place like a womp rat surprised by the headlights of an oncoming speeder, that Din looked like a proper spacer, the kind of man who might wander around the streets of Mos Eisley at night looking for something to drink. But Din wasn't sure he believed her.
Only one way to find out, he thought, staring down at the mostly quiet street below.
Din had never paid much attention to what a proper spacer looked like. He had some experience with them. Half his bounties over the years had been smugglers and spacers, vacuum jockeys who'd gotten into deep borrowing clink for the latest starship, who'd skimmed too much off the top of their shipments, who'd crossed the Empire or the New Republic or a gang boss, and found their faces on guild pucks.
Never paid much attention to what they wore, I guess, Din thought.
Spacers and smugglers did go around armed, though, so at least Din had been able to sling a blaster across one hip and a vibroknife across the other. The darksaber knocked comfortingly against his side whenever Din inhaled.
You ready? Din repeated, looking at Fennec again. His nerves were mounting, and he didn't want them to fail. We can switch roofs if you want.
Fennec had grabbed a bigger blaster before she and Din had slunk out of the palace through the tunnels and come up outside of Mos Eisley. She'd picked her favorite paladin class, MK2, which she'd once told Din that she had modified herself and could use to take down a charging Ronto from 3 clicks out. She was looking down at the cantina, Gela's place, through her rifle scope, checking angles and lines of sight.
When she's not kicking me, Din thought. His ankle throbbed.
I'm as ready as I'm going to be, Fennec finally said, tone dry. She didn't look up from her rifle. Line of sight's pretty good from here. Just stay out of the southwest corner. I don't have a good angle for a clean shot.
Din nodded. He could do that.
He looked down across the street. Fennec had chosen the rooftop of some city administrative building for her nest. It wasn't a sky tower by any means, maybe 5 or 6 stories all stacked together, but it was taller than most of its immediate neighbors. The only taller structures around were the spaceport control towers, but none of them had the clear length of sight into Gela's place that Fennec wanted. Gela's place itself was almost bizarrely innocuous. It was the sort of place that someone like Din, a hunter in a criminal boss's employ, wouldn't look twice at because it was hard to imagine that anything illegal could or would happen there at all. Gela's place was small for a cantina, maybe 20 feet long and another 15 or 20 feet deep, 2 stories tall and made of the same textured wattle as most of Mos Eisley's buildings. Except Gela's place was painted pink. A tiny rock garden had been planted around the building's exterior, budding with blue sweet knife and red five eyes, the flowers bright against the washed-out color of the rest of the street.
"Are you sure this is a cantina?" Fennec asked, peering through her scope again. "There's people in there, but it looks like a tea house. Maybe an upscale sabachthan, but even that seems like a stretch."
Din squinted across the street again, missing his visor. There was a sign above the door. The letters were faded, but Din was pretty sure that the sign read, Gela's Place. Whoever had taken the cantina from Gita's sister hadn't bothered to change the name.
Gita said that it was, Din said. Only one way to find out, I guess. How do I look?
Din resisted the urge to fidget, to tug at the unfamiliar lines of his borrowed clothes or run a hand through his hair. Every gust of wind made him flinch. Fennec looked at him, assessing, and Din fought down the urge to hide his face in his hands.
"This was my idea," he reminded himself. "I'm not going to back out now."
Fennec looked Din up and down, then grimaced. Din wilted a little.
"What?" he said. "That bad?" "No," said Fennec. "You don't look awful. It's convincing. It's just weird."
Din grimaced back at her. "Feels weirder than it looks," he said. When he'd been digging around in the palace's old guest rooms for clothes, Din had to stop himself from wrapping himself up in as many layers as possible, like Cobb Vanth did with all of his sweaters. Din hadn't worn clothes like this since he was a child.
Longer, actually, he thought.
In his village, before the Separatists had come, everyone had worn red tunics cinched at the waist and plain sandals, unless they'd been waiting out in the spring floods. No one had bothered with leather boots or gun belts.
"Here," Fennec said, still eyeing Din critically. "Bend down for a second."
Din obeyed, and Fennec reached up to tousle his hair. The movement was so surprising that Din almost fell over. Fennec caught him by the collar of his shirt and kept ruffling.
"There," Fennec finally said, letting Din back up.
Din's scalp tingled. He knew that his eyes were wide, surprised. Only Boba had touched Din's hair. No one else ever had, not since Din had been a small child. Fennec and Nora liked to tease Din about the state of it over first meal, about his stray curls and his general air of disarray, but neither of them had ever reached up to touch him.
"Now you look like a proper smuggler," she said. "Scruffy."
Din resisted the urge to reach up and smooth his hair back down.
"If you say so," he muttered, cheeks burning faintly.
"Scruffy enough to pass muster in a hot-run cantina?" Fennec, apparently tired of being helpful, just shrugged.
"Until you open your mouth, anyway."
Din scowled at her. Her lips twitched.
"Better," she said. "Nobody who works for the huts looks happy about it."
"We'll keep that in mind," Din muttered. He looked down at Gela's again and took a fortifying breath.
I'll stay out of that southwest corner if I can. Do some recon, maybe play a few hands of sabacc. If there's no one suspicious or nothing I can find tied to the huts, I'll call it a night. Maybe try to find the head, poke around a little, but I'm not looking to tip off Gorga's spy or anything. Din and Fennec had talked about that on the way over, when Fennec had looked across the tunnel and had seen how tense Din had been, pulling at his borrowed clothes. They weren't trying to catch Gorga's accomplice tonight. Fennec wanted to figure out who it was, if possible, wanted to follow them and to gather information, wanted to figure out how much they knew about Boba's operation. But she didn't want to make Gorga feel desperate. "We don't want to force a head-on confrontation just yet if we can help it," she'd said. Din understood the sentiment. "Be careful," Fennec warned. Her expression was very serious. "Still got your fob on you?" Din nodded. He'd slipped it into his boot while he'd gotten dressed. He'd left his armor behind, but Din still wanted Fennec to be able to find him if Gela's place did turn out to be a hut front and Din's cover was blown. And let's be honest, Din thought to himself, mostly wry, "I'm not good at whisper work. There's a pretty good chance that I'm going to blow my cover." Fennec had given Din some advice on their way over. She'd told him to say very little, to give just enough detail to anyone who asked to let them make up their own story about who Din was, where he came from, what he wanted. She told him to trust his gut, to pull back if he needed help. Apprehension tightened in Din's belly, writhing like a wounded spit viper, but there was nothing to be done for it. Trying to do things like a Mandalorian Baroya didn't work, Din reminded himself. This just might. "Hey," Fennec said, tugging her helmet on. It hid everything but her eyes, which shone in the light from the street lamps below. "It's gonna be all right, Jaren. I've got your back." She said it so evenly that Din couldn't help but believe her. She's always had Boba's back, Din thought. She'd fought at Din's side on the light cruiser, in the throne room. Fennec was as true as Beskar. He made himself nod. "In and out," he promised her. "An hour, maybe two." She nodded, and Din turned his back to Gela's place. He made his way to the lip of the building's roof, took one more breath to fortify himself, and then made himself scramble down to the alley behind it, using a cable he and Fennec had hung on their way up to the rooftop. When his boots hit the ground, Din set all of his apprehension, all of his tension, all of the churning fear in his belly that twitched through him like a nerve exposed to open air, to the side. A spacer wouldn't be afraid to walk into a Tatooinean cantina, Din told himself. "I'm not a Mandalorian, I'm not a bounty hunter, I'm just a vacuum jockey coming in from the block looking for somewhere to drink." Din didn't let himself linger in the alley behind Fennec's sniper's nest, even though he wanted to. His instinct now was to stick to the shadows, to hide himself as much and as best he could. But that wouldn't get the work done. Din thought of Palace Vizsla again. "If I only did what I liked, I'd never get anything done." Din had done all sorts of unpleasant things over the years in the name of his duty. He wasn't responsible for feeding his tribe anymore, wasn't even a Mandalorian, had taken his armor off like an Arueti and was going to walk into enemy territory without it. But Din did still have a duty. A responsibility to his people, even if his people now were Boba and Fennec and Nura and Geeta and Muspelgo, the Tuskens. "Gorga will kill us all if we let him," Din thought. Conviction hardened inside his chest, as heavy as Beskar. "I won't let him." Din stepped out into the main street and let its lights wash over him. The business district was never as rowdy as the Gleaning, even during its nights. Many of the beings who lived here liked to pretend that they were above the rabble, that they were better than the rest of the city, that they made the clink legitimately instead of through Boba's enterprises or worse. Some of them do make their livings legitimately, Din thought. Pelly lived at the very edge of the business district, just barely considered respectable despite her sharp tongue and her oil-stained hands. Geeta's sister Gela had been trying to be respectable, too. No one painted a building in Mos Eisley pink, planted flowers, unless they were trying to make their clink on the right side of the law. "Why does Siolo think that this is a front?" Din thought, making his way towards Gela's front door. He could hear music inside, something faint and low and smooth. The breeze brushed against Din's face. What felt intimate in Boba's rooms, The cool breath of a Tatooine evening, the silver light of the moons, felt almost invasive now, like Din was being watched from everywhere, seen from every angle. Din did his best to ignore it. Is it because Gela herself was disappeared? Din wondered, stumbling over his thoughts a little. He hadn't asked Geeta if her sister had been killed or if she'd just vanished, as beings sometimes did in Mos Eisley. Disappeared into the sands or the Sorrow Lanes, never to be seen again. Or is it just because Siola recognized a bartender? Now that he was here, standing in front of the building, ready to walk inside without any armor on, with his face bare, Din's doubts seethed in his belly like a nest of Kyrick flies. That was a thin, thin connection. Din was sure that hundreds of beings who'd worked for Jabba or for Bib Fortuna back in the day had found other employment when the worm had died. From what Din had heard, Fortuna had been so bad at running the business that anyone with half a brain, with other options, had abandoned him, going off to scrape together a living somewhere else. This bartender Siola recognized, or thought that he recognized, could just be one of those people. A bouncer or a bartender who'd gotten tired of waiting for Fortuna to turn a profit. But it's all we have, Din reminded himself. He laid a hand on the cantina's door. It was a nice door, he noticed absently, made of real wood, which was a rarity even in the business district. Gela must have loved this place. Din pushed the door open and stepped inside. No one even looked up at Din, which was such a relief that Din wanted to sag back against the doorway. A bartender, a thin human man with weak blonde hair and a scar cut over one eye, looked up and swept his gaze over Din and then away so fast that Din knew he didn't even really register Din's presence. It worked, Din thought, weak with relief. The bartender, at least, had bought Din's disguise. He was just another spacer, one of half a dozen inside the cantina. Nobody remarkable. Din's relief bolstered him some, let the hunter in the back of his head surface and come to the forefront. Din catalogued the room's inhabitants quickly. There were a fair number of humans inside of Gela's place, a few Deveronians too, a pair of Weequay playing sabacc, three Twi'leks, a knot of Jawas. In addition to the human bartender, there was a female Zygerian running drinks between tables. That pricked up Din's instincts. Another Zygerian, he thought, remembering Sholto. Din was tempted to brush the connection off. Two Zygerians hanging around Mos Eisley over the course of several weeks wasn't unexpected or unusual. Despite its harsh climate and its harsher locals, settler folk, Ahra and Tuscans all, Tatooine was a trading hub, and if there was still an Imperial presence on Arcanus, like Bobad said there was, Din wasn't surprised to see that most beings still preferred to use Tatooine as a hub and a watering hole. Zygerians did more than run slaves. Din had known a few Zygerian mercs, some merchants too. Zygeria was a slaving empire, but their slaves dug spice, built ships, made art. Zygeria had its fair share of the luxury goods market, too. I've never seen one tend bar, though, Din thought to himself. Fennec had told him to trust his gut. Din's gut told him to keep an eye on the Zygerian. He resolved to do just that, taking a few more steps into the cantina and orienting himself towards all of its entrances and exits. In addition to the front door, there was a hallway branching off to the right of the bar, probably towards the freshers. There was a door directly behind the bar, tightly shut, and a row of windows along the front of the cantina and down its eastern wall. There had to be stairs somewhere to get to the upper floor, but Din couldn't see them from where he was standing. The southwestern corner of Gela's place, Fennec's only blind spot, was occupied by a pair of tables shoved together, but only one being, a humanoid with their hood up, face hidden by shadow, was sitting there. Din could see that the being had long, dark hair locked together in neat dreads, the ends peeking out from underneath their hood draped down their shoulders. But the being's face was turned away from the door. Odd, Din thought, taking a few more steps inside, bolstered a little by the fact that he hadn't been immediately identified as one of Boba's people and shot. But not that odd, not on Tatooine. There were plenty of hunters and killers and pirates who came to Tatooine to drink alone in the corner. The humanoid had a glass bottle of spotchka at one elbow. Din resolved to keep an eye on the corner, since Fennec couldn't do it for him, and shifted his attention to the rest of the cantina. I should have asked Gita which bartender Ciolo knew from Fortuna's Day, Din thought. If it was the human or the Zygerian. Doesn't really matter, though, he thought. With luck, I'll find out who's involved, or not involved, by paying attention.
Din made his way over to the bar, looking around while he did so. Inside, Gellis' place looked even less like a hut front than it did from the outside. The walls were painted a delicate shade of pale blue, though the paint was faded in places and badly chipped in others, like the walls hadn't been touched up in a while. And there were little murals painted all over the place. Flowers and animals and symbols, most of them real. The western wall, lacking windows, had a large tapestry that was frayed around all four of its edges. Behind the bar there was a mural of two Twi'leks, a man and a woman. The man had purple skin and a smiling face. There were no designs painted on his leku. The woman had orange skin, maybe a shade darker than Gita's, and she had the same intricate detailed bands marching down her leku, curling over her shoulders, that Gita had.
Gella, Din thought, studying the mural.
Gita's sister was very beautiful. She looked happy in the painting. Din wondered who the male Twi'lek was. A lover, a brother? Gita had said that it was a businessman who'd fallen in love with Gella and bought her freedom. Was it this man painted on the wall? What had happened to him when Gella disappeared? Din set that thought aside. He didn't see any obvious hut symbols painted or carved anywhere. If this was a hut front, it was quiet about it. Din made it up to the bar and leaned against it, reaching inside his head for the affected boredom, the cool disinterest that came so easily to him when he was in his armor. It came less easily to Din here and now. The bartender flicked a glance over Din, and Din had to bodily stop himself from flinching. He wished that he'd found a jacket or a coat instead of a vest. A big bandana, like Vanth wore. Something that Din could tuck his face into, or at least pull up over his mouth.
It's too late for that, Din thought. I'm already here. I've already been seen.
When Din had taken his helmet off on Morak, he'd frozen in front of Alan Hash. He hadn't been able to answer any of Hess's questions, even simple ones like his designation or his name. He'd been so caught up in the ringing in his ears, the enormity of what he'd just done, the deep, irrational certainty that his Alor or Paz or any of the other warriors of his tribe would pop up from around a corner and put a blaster bolt between Din's eyes, that he had barely been able to speak. If Mayfield hadn't been there with him, hadn't stepped in, Din was sure he would have been caught out and killed.
I don't have Mayfield here, Din thought. I can't freeze up. No one's going to get me out of this. I need to keep it together.
Fennec was on the roof across the street. She'd start shooting if things went badly. But she wasn't here. Wasn't able to speak for Din to take the attention off of him. Din was going to have to do this himself. Determined, Din lifted his chin and caught the bartender's eye. It seared him, made him want to pull his shoulders up, made him want to look away. But Din didn't, gathering up all of his courage with both hands. The bartender flicked him another bored glance, then sharpened when he realized that ignoring Din wasn't going to make Din leave. Up close, Din could see more of the bartender's face than he'd been able to see from the doorway. The man was Din's age or a little older, his weak blonde hair going gray at the temples. The scar across his face had been made by a knife, not a claw or a tooth. It was long and straight and old, the skin puckered and pink.
Old enough to have worked under Jabba and Bib Fortuna, Din thought, but that could be said about a lot of people on Tatooine.
Oh, the bartender grunted. What'll it be, huh? Din's thoughts stumbled for a moment, instinctive alarm crashing through him when the bartender looked Din full in the face. But he made himself answer, voice as even as he could make it.
Spotchka, if you've got it. Boganaga, if you don't.
Din had reached for and leaned hard on the sort of accent someone like Cobb Vanth or any of his babs would have. A Tatooine accent, spoken like the way Sand Dune walked, lazy and meandering. It was different from the cadence of Din's own voice, but maybe that would help him. Everyone knew that Boba Fett's pet Mandalorian didn't talk much. The bartender grimaced.
"Sold the last of my spotchka for the night," he said, tilting his head in the direction of the hooded humanoid sitting alone in the corner. Unless my delivery guy gets here before the sun's come up. The nug is fresh, though. Got some in yesterday.
Fine, Din said, fishing a dented golden whoopee-whoopee coin out of one of his pockets. He thunked it down on the bar and tried not to wince when the bartender cut Din another glance, his eyes skating over the planes of Din's bare face like a blade. The bartender snorted.
Pull a Bogonaga's a half chug, he said.
Din raised an eyebrow.
For Naga?
The bartender shrugged.
If it's too rich for your taste, Zootmian, there's 50 other watering holes between here and the sands. Go find one of them.
Dobranopa Zootmian, Din said, tone deliberately mild. He dug a trugat, another Hadi's coin, out of his pocket and set it down on the bar beside his whoopee-whoopee.
Dobrapati Mulira.
That made the bartender draw back a little, blinking in surprise. Din didn't speak Hadi's with a Tatooinean accent, because he'd learned Hadi's from Wirin back as a child in the covert, and Wirin had learned it from a Corellian named Meeks, who hadn't minded the profusion of Mandalorian children trailing around after him during the year or so they'd lived on Bracco. Din leaned into Meeks's accent, too, rolling his words like he'd learned them in the slums beneath Coronet City. Plenty of spacers came to the Outer Rim from Corellia. A few of them even made their way out here to Tatooine.
"What's a scrim rat like you doing all the way out here?" the bartender asked, swiping Din's clink off the bar.
He'd bought it. Din relaxed a little.
"I heard the New Republic was paying Canto coin to boys like you."
"Boys like me?" Din thought, a bit baffled. "I'm nearly 40." He hid his confusion as best he could, though, shrugging with one shoulder and leaning hard on the calm of the Boroya that still lurked underneath the surface of his thoughts. Din wrapped that calm around himself like armor. He could do this. He could do this. He bent every thought, every effort, towards appearing like what he was. A tired man with gray in his beard, looking for a decent drink.
"I don't have much interest in the New Republic's clink, Canto payouts or not," Din remarked.
The bartender turned back to face him, armed with two tall glasses of dark Bogonaga. Din took one and flicked a finger at the other. The bartender shrugged and kept it for himself, along with the whoopee-whoopee.
"I hear that Republic credits come with the Republic's rules."
The bartender chuckled and lifted his glass.
"Fair enough, Patty," he said. "Welcome to Gellar's place."
Din nodded and raised his own glass, taking a long, deep drink of it to help settle his nerves. The taste filled his mouth, made his molars ache. Din fought down a grimace.
"I'm Haska," the bartender said. "Shout when you're ready for another."
Din nodded again, remembering Fennec's advice to say as little as possible. He kept his name to himself for now. He hadn't even thought about coming up with an alias, which he'd want to use as further cover, took another tooth-aching swallow of hot beer, and swung his attention around to the rest of Gellar's place. Din knew that he couldn't hope to just sit down in a corner and wait for someone to come to him, like he had when he'd waited for Lady Valerian and Mosentha. "I was in my armor then," Din thought. "Everyone knew who it was, or at least what I was." Din's reputation had made it so that all he'd needed to do was wait for Valerian to be curious about what Din wanted and come find out for herself. "No one knows who I am like this," Din thought. The truth of that was plain to see. When Din walked into a cantina in his armor, every eye in the place turned to look at him. His every movement was watched. His every word, few of them as he usually spoke, picked over. Here, no one had even bothered to look up from their drinks. "I'm harmless," Din told himself. "I'm nobody. Just another smuggler looking to relax after a run. Nothing special." If he thought it hard enough, Din could almost believe it. A little more settled now, bolstered by the cantina's general indifference, Din studied the room in more detail, filing information away in his head, and took his time in deciding what to do next. "I can't afford to wait around in a corner and hope that someone strikes up a conversation," he thought. Tatooine was not known for its friendly and welcoming demeanor. "So," Din thought, sweeping his gaze over the room, "it looks like I'm going to have to make some friends instead of waiting for them to come to me." He could do that. Probably, he thought, wry, and went over to join one of the small circles of sabacc players that dotted the room, choosing a band that had an open seat at their table. Din didn't bother asking for permission to join their game. He just thunked down his half-drunk glass of Bogonaga, dug a fistful of trugats out of his pocket, tossed them into the sabacc pot in the middle of the table, and made himself comfortable.
The dealer, another human man, this one with reddish hair and a loose, flabby face, dealt Din into the next hand without comment, giving Din the opening he needed to fold himself into the fabric of Gela's place like he'd always been there. Fennec had been right about the atmosphere of the place. Despite the number of beings drinking and playing cards, Gela's didn't feel like a cantina. It was too quiet, almost too reserved, too neat and ordered, in a way that cantinas on Tatooine never were. None of the others at the table offered Din their names, so Din didn't offer his either. He was playing with two Deveronians, one blue and one red, a pair of Weequay, and a tough, wiry human woman, in addition to the red-haired man who was dealing the cards. The pot wasn't very big, but Din didn't mind. He wasn't playing to win, necessarily. I need information, not credits, Din thought. And to get information, I need to get someone to talk to me. Din had counted cards at the sabacc table for years. Back before the Empire had started to really hunt Mandalorians in earnest, things in the covert had been a little looser. A little less structured and strict. A little less desperate. The foundlings had been allowed to wander out, as long as an older warrior had stayed close by, and contribute to the tribe's resources if they could. Din had hunted small animals, and he'd fished, and he'd learned how to repair ship engines, generators, and any small mechanical thing he'd been able to find. And he had played sabacc. It's a good way to make some credits fast, he thought to himself a few rounds later. He'd won two rounds and lost himself a third, mostly so his table mates didn't get too suspicious too quickly. He folded on a fourth hand, too, grimacing. One of the Deveronians caught Din at it and chuckled. "Sometimes the cards just ain't right," the Deveronian said, throwing down his own hand with a noisy sigh. He was red-skinned, like Berg had been, and his horns were polished to a bright shine. He'd had quite a bit to drink. The table around his pile of cards and credits was littered with empty spotchka bottles. "Sometimes," Din agreed dryly, settling back in his chair to let the rest of the table fight over the current pot. Din could have won if he'd wanted to. He knew what the next three cards off the deck were going to be, and he could have pulled off a sabacc shift handily, but he didn't need to win the round to stay in the game. He had plenty of credits to burn, for once. "Heard you talking to Hashka," the Deveronian said. He fixed his attention on Din. Din's skin pulled tight, heart kicking, but he fought it down. "Not a nude man, huh? I ain't sure I've seen you around before." Din shrugged, keeping his eyes on the cards changing hands across the table. "I need to be careful," he thought. "I can't overdo it." "I'm not in Mos Eisley much," Din said. The Deveronian made a considering sound. "Well, where'd you usually stomp around, then?" Din leveled a cool look at the Deveronian, who looked just as coolly back. Din ran through a series of observations in his head. The Deveronian was big, as was most of his species, but he was relatively unscarred. His horns and his clothes were in good shape. He carried a blaster at his hip, but the leather of his holster was smooth and unscuffed, so new that it was still stiff. "A merchant, I'd guess," Din thought. "Respectable, not a smuggler." Din thought for a moment, buying himself more time with another sip of his beer, then said, "Was running through Mos Entha for a while." That got the attention of the rest of the table. Din felt it hiss and crackle through the air like sparks flying off a Beskar forge when the hammer struck true metal. Din suppressed a smile. "Not so respectable after all," he thought. "Mos Entha," the human woman said carefully. Her eyes were on her cards, but her attention was fixed on Din. "Don't get too many crossovers between there and here." Din shrugged. "It was a last-minute decision," he said, hoping that he wasn't laying it on too thick. "Had some trouble in Mos Entha with, my permits. You know how it is." The woman actually nodded like she did know exactly how it was, but the Deveronian just blinked, clearly confused. "He might actually be an Outlander," Din thought, watching the Deveronian watch him. "He's certainly clean enough." But the others at the table, the blue Deveronian, the wiry woman, and the Weequay pair, understood what Din was saying. Their attention sharpened. Din straightened his back to meet it. The red-haired man just kept shuffling cards, getting ready to deal the next round. "I've heard that permit mix-ups in Mos Entha are a good way to get given to the Sands," the woman remarked. She set her cards down and reached into the middle of the table, collecting the round's pot to add to her tidy pile of winnings. Din shrugged again. I've got a fast ship, he said. The woman laughed. And a good head on your shoulders if you caught the mix-up before it turned bad, she said. I'm Evie. Din hesitated for a split second, then gave her the first name that came into his head. Gal, he said. The older warriors in the covert had called Din Galika a few times. Little Hawk. It was short and simple, and something Din had answered to before. He could answer to it again if he had to. Gal Dun. Sorry, Kara. Evie smiled at him, sly and knowing. You're not a half-bad player, either, she said, nodding at Din's pile of credits. Just lucky, said Din, not wanting to draw any more attention to himself. I have to be careful with this kind of talk, Din thought. He hated speaking in code. Mandalorians said what they meant. Doublespeak was hard to keep track of. Keep it simple, Jaren, he told himself. No details, nothing that anyone can actually check. One of the Weequay snorted into his cup. Can't have been making out too bad in Macentha, he said. Looks like you got plenty of credits to burn. Din just shrugged again. He hoped that his silence was mysterious, maybe, or at the very least expected. When Din was in his armor, other beings took his silence as a threat, almost, as another layer of bright metal, something that Din hid behind, something that protected him. But will they think the same thing about Gal Dun? Din wondered. The Weequay just grunted. Should've kept your credits in Macentha, made your peace with the old sow, he said. What'd you call them, permits? They ain't exactly cheap in Mos Eisley these days. Cheaper by credits, maybe, but that's only if you grovel to that piece of Sarlacc spit sitting up in the palace first. You were better off facing Valerian's tusks. Din startled a little, lifting his head and meeting the Weequay's eye. He's telling me that I was better off working for Valerian than trying to work for Boba, Din translated. He eyed the Weequay, who stared back with shrewd eyes. Weequay faces were hard to read sometimes. The crags and ridges of their tough skin didn't show emotion as easily as a human's face did. Is that his way of saying that he's one of Valerian's people and he doesn't like that I, that Gal Dun, ran out on her? Din had discounted Valerian as Gorgas Nexupaw because Valerian was a well-known enemy of the Hutts. She'd taken pieces out of Jabba's empire for years. She'd told Din to his face that she had no interest in seeing another Hutt back on Tatooine. She agreed to leave us alone if we stayed out of Mos Eisley, Din thought. Had Valerian lied? Din examined that thought for a moment, then discarded it. Valerian had firepower of her own. She wouldn't have needed to go through Gorga to get to Boba. And if she had, she wouldn't have let us recover, Din thought. She's too practical. She would have sent more mercs in to finish us off. She wouldn't have let us get back up again. I don't mind the expense, said Din, keeping his voice as mild as he could make it, not wanting to offend the Weequay before Din could learn more from him. Just as long as the permits don't change every time the sun comes up. The red-haired man passed him his next hand. Din took a perfunctory look. He had a mistress of staves and a six of sabers. 19, not bad, Din thought. The blue Deferonian at Din's left had terrible cards. A commander of flasks and the star. Din discounted him from this round. He'd have to pull off a miracle to win, and the dealer was cheating. There would be no miracles here. Din set his own cards down on the table and tossed a handful of truggets into the pot. He had good odds this round. The Weequay snorted again. I don't know about every time the sun's come up, he said. But I'd be careful, Pati. Word on the street is there's going to be new management soon. Din did have to fight, then, to keep his face from betraying him. He stared at the dealer's hands as they flicked over a deck of cards and fought down any expression that might have crossed his face. New management, Din thought. Gorga? The problem was that Din couldn't come right out and ask, not without running the risk of giving himself away. An ordinary spacer wouldn't care about who was running Mos Eisley. Credits were credits, no matter where they came from. Well, Kark, Din said, still mild. Guess I should have swung off to Nar Shadda after all. I didn't realize that Mos Eisley was so contested. Last time I was here, getting some business done was like taking clams from a Gungan. The Weequay chuckled. Been off planet for a while? Din shrugged. I go where the work is, he said. His nerves tightened. I can't keep talking like this. I don't know what to say. But I don't want to worry about work. Or about getting shot in the streets. This, change in management, it's not going to spill over into my bunkhouse, is it? It was the Weequay's turn to shrug. Depends, he said. Where are you bunking? Din froze. Tink Ferrick. On my ship, Din said. Docked in one of the bays. Business side or gleaning side? The Weequay's eyes glittered. Din almost said business side before he caught himself. Someone who hadn't spent much time in Mos Eisley wouldn't know the difference between the city's districts. Din narrowed his eyes a little. The Weequay looked guilelessly back. Not giving an answer at all would be almost as bad as giving the wrong answer, so Din made himself wave a hand, hoping it was vague enough to satisfy the Weequay, at the spaceports across the street from Gela's place. "Dunno what district this is," Din said, "but just down the street." "Ah," said the Weequay. He looked at his companion. They could have been brothers, the pair of them, with the same bright bird-like eyes and the same number of spikes marching up and down their jaws. And the second Weequay inclined his head a little. "Nah, you should be fine here." "Good," Din said, trying desperately not to react to that little piece of information. "They think there's going to be another attack." The Weequay could just be guessing. Gorga the Hutt had hit Boba's place. Everyone in Mos Eisley knew that. It wasn't a stretch to assume that Gorga would attack again, especially since Boba had shaken off the attack so well and was continuing on with his business.
But he didn't say that there might be an attack, Din thought. He said that there will be a change in management. So he knows that Gorga's coming back. But does he know that because he's involved, or does he know because no one stands up to the Hutts for long and lives?
"I don't want to talk about work," Din repeated, judging his odds against the cards that had already been dealt and taking a card off the dealer's stack when it was his turn. It was a four of sabers. Din had a smile. "As long as I'm not getting shot in my bed, I'm not too worried about who's signing off my permits." "Ikbo, knock it off," the female Zygerian bartender snapped, breezing by to collect a few empty bottles and mugs from the table, dropping off a few new ones to replace them. She had a sharp voice and sharper eyes. Din saw the Weequay, Ikbo, wince. "Don't run your crooked mouth." The Weequay grunted. The red Deveronian leaned in again, raising his eyebrows significantly. "You said you've got a fast ship, huh?" he pressed. "What are you flying?" Din looked at the Deveronian out of the corner of his eye. "Nothing too special," Din said. He didn't want to point anyone towards the fly, so he couldn't say that he was flying a Hawk 290. He wasn't sure if anyone knew that Boba's Mandalorian flew a Hawk 290, but the fly had been seen around Mos Eisley before. "Just a YT-2400. "Nothing special," the Deveronian exclaimed, and launched into an excited conversation about ships and freighters. It was easier to talk about engine parts and hyperspace lanes than it was to play at being a smuggler looking for a new boss. Din had been up to his elbows in engines and starships for 20 years and knew enough to pass himself off as a decent mechanic. He was less familiar with hyperspace lanes, mostly because he always tried to avoid them, charting his own courses through the galaxy when he'd been able to, but he knew enough to make considering noises in the right places. Din settled some as the Sabacc game continued. He won the current hand with a pure Sabacc, netting himself a tidy pile of credits, which he slowly lost over the course of several more hands to keep his companions talking. The talkative red Deveronian introduced himself as Sivar, and Din was pretty sure that he was harmless. He was the only legitimate business being at the table. Sivar dealt in used ship parts, which was why he'd taken such an interest in Din's imaginary YT-2400. The other Deveronian, who Sivar just called Big Blue, was not a legitimate business being. He worked the black market, Din was pretty sure. Big Blue refused to answer any direct or indirect questions about his business, but kept saying that he worked in acquisitions, which in Din's experience meant theft. Din left Big Blue alone. He slowly learned the names of most of the rest of his tablemates. The two Weequay were Ikbo, who'd been scolded by the Zygerian, and Ono, Ikbo's quieter brother. Evie had already introduced herself, and the red-haired dealer hadn't given anyone a name as far as Din had heard. The Zygerian's name was Jassa, or Jaisa. Ikbo had said it to her as she'd passed once, low and sweet, like he was trying to work his way back into her good graces, and she'd hissed and swiped him across the back of the head. It's a start for Fennec, though, Din thought. She'll appreciate even a few names to run down. Even if Din didn't manage to turn up anything that caught them Gorgas by tonight, Din was sure that Fennec would be able to learn everything there was to know about Sivar and Big Blue and Iqbo and Ano. About Haska, the bartender, too, if he was the one who'd worked for Bib Fortuna, or if it had been the Zygerian.
I just need to figure out what her name is, Din thought. Jassa or Jessa. Then I can go back to Fennec.
The Zygerian had flitted in and out of Din's line of sight since he'd arrived. She looked a lot like Jalto now that Din had a closer look at her, narrow-faced, haughty. Slender, but lean with a predator's grace to the way that she moved.
But I'm sure that Zygerians think all humans look alike, too, Din thought. He needed more information.
The fact that the Zygerian didn't move much like a bartender wasn't anything Din could bring to Fennec. She moved like a warrior, light and dangerous, every step measured. But that didn't mean that she was one, and Din had never seen her around the palace. If she was Gorga's accomplice, she'd had to have someone helping her from inside Boba's outfit. A headache began to prickle behind Din's right ear. He scowled down at his current hand, not spectacular, and wished that everyone, even Boba's enemies, behaved like Mandalorians.
When two coverts feud, we settle it in the open, Din thought, disgruntled. No one hid their disdain or their anger.
Paz had never shied away from picking over Din's decisions in front of the tribe, just like Din had never shied away from punching Paz in the throat in front of whoever cared to watch. A few times he'd even done it in front of Annika, and she'd never intervened. It was better, the Allure had taught them all, to settle feuds out in the open before they could fester, before they could rot. It was the way. A pang went through Din.
It wasn't always the way, he thought.
He knew more of Mandalore's history now. Din's people might have tried to settle things out in the open, but there were plenty of Mandalorians who'd relied on whisperwork and spycraft, on lies and betrayals and secrets. Tor Vizsla and the old Death Watch, the minister who betrayed the neutral Mandalorians to the Sith and later the Empire. Gar Saxon.
Bo-Katan Kryze, Din thought.
He pushed her out of his head. Bo-Katan's gathering was approaching. Din still had a few weeks before he made the trip out to Cronest, but...
But she wants something, too, Din thought. Just like Gorga does.
Not year-round, huh? Sivar said, breaking into Din's thoughts. Din's scowl deepened. No, he said, tossing his cards down. Not really.
Better watch out, Din, Evie taunted lightly, flashing Din a smile.
You're gonna lose out entirely if you can't win another hand. Winning at the Sabacc table hadn't been Din's goal for tonight, so he just shrugged.
Sometimes that's the way it is, he said. Must not be my night.
The other players at his table made a variety of noises, ranging from sympathetic, Sivar, who Din was alarmed to find himself feeling vaguely protective over, to derisive. Evie was in the best position to win, but Ono, Iqbo's quieter brother, could also pull off the Sabacc pot. Ono, Din was pretty sure, had some kind of arrangement with the dealer. The red-haired man kept throwing Ono the best cards, even when there was a Sabacc shift and all of the cards changed hands. Din's skin prickled in time with his growing headache. The longer he spent inside Gela's place, the more he was convinced that something just wasn't quite right. It was almost too ordinary, too bright, too cheerful, too normal. It felt to Din like almost everyone inside was trying too hard. Like he wasn't the only one pretending to be something that he wasn't, and everyone else knew that.
Bad feelings aren't enough to go on, though, Din thought.
Across the table, Big Blue folded on the sand too, making Evie, who'd been bluffing everyone for all she was worth in hopes of getting a higher pot, growl in frustration.
I need more than names, Din thought.
Names and a bad feeling would be a good place to start, would be enough to get Boba to burn Gela's place to the ground, honestly, if Din went to Boba with what he'd gathered so far and told Boba he didn't like the place. The names Din had gathered... Fennec, despite her general competent skill and deep irritation with Gorga's accomplice, hadn't been able to check out everyone in Mos Eisley, so giving her some new names to run down might yet yield some workable intel, but...
But I need more, Din thought, jaw working. I need something that justifies this risk.
Boba was not going to be happy when he found out what Din had been getting up to. That Din had walked into the city unarmored. Din bit back another deep scowl.
I don't care if he's unhappy, Din thought, even though he knew that wasn't true.
He wanted Boba to be happy. He liked being the one to make Boba happy. To be the one who got Boba to relax so thoroughly that he slept through Din getting up and leaving to get first meal. The one who got to see Boba sleep rumpled and languid, all of his tension worn away. Boba had called himself greedy before. He'd said that he liked to hoard Din's first experiences with everything Boba had shown him, Din's reactions to those things. But I'm just as bad, Din thought. He liked having pieces of Boba that no one else saw, just as much as Boba seemed to like having pieces of Din. He shook that thought away. Boba will... he'll get over this, Din thought. This hasn't even been that dangerous. There's no carbon on the walls, no damage, no blood. No one gets shot here. And Boba will get over it faster if I can turn up something useful. Something that made this... the risk, mitigated as it was by Fennec on the roof across the street, worth it. Din leaned back in his chair, finally taking his eyes off his immediate circle, and took a closer look at the cantina moving around him. Din had been here for close to an hour now. A few more patrons had come in, and a few had left. The makeup of the crowd was more or less the same, though. Most were beings like Din, or at least like Din appeared to be. Spacers coming off a flight, business district residents making small talk with Haska at the bar, mechanics celebrating the end of a long day. Ordinary people at first glance. Even at a second glance. Din couldn't find anything overtly suspicious about anyone inside Gela's, even though his instincts were twitching and bristling like a caged vine tiger. The humanoid in the corner, the one with the hood and the half-drunk bottle of Spatchka, was gone. Din hadn't seen them leave. He blinked, a little disconcerted, but moved on. There was nothing he could do about it now. Siola said that he knew a bartender, Din reminded himself, refocusing his attention on what he knew instead of what he suspected. So that means that he knows Haska, or he knows the Zygerian, Jessa or Jessa. One of them worked for Bib Fortuna, and Bib Fortuna was probably paying off the huts. Is it Haska? Din wondered, studying the man. Haska was old enough to have worked under Bib Fortuna. Jabba, too. He could have done anything for either of them. Hunted, guarded, fought, served drinks. That scar down Haska's face wasn't affectation. A scar that bad was earned. Or is it the Zygerian? Din lidded his eyes, taking his attention off the Sabacc game entirely, and felt out his instincts. Fennec had told Din to trust them, and Din had to admit that she wasn't wrong. Din's instincts, honed to a knife's edge after years as a hunter, very rarely led him wrong. Listening to his instincts had saved Din's life more times than he could count. Grogu's life, too. And Fennec's. Din had pulled her into his arms and shielded them both from the grenade that had gone off during Gorga's attack. So which one? Din thought, sinking as deep into the boy's watchful calm as he could without giving himself away. Do I feel as Gorga's accomplice? Or at least is more likely to be involved? The answer came to him almost immediately. The Zygerian. There was just something off about her. She didn't move like an ordinary bartender, and Zygerians almost never worked in any kind of service either. Their species was known for its pride, its belief in Zygerian superiority. And the Weequit listened when she told him to stop running his mouth, Din thought. She has some pull with him. He searched for the Zygerian again and found her standing with another table of Sabacc players, arguing quietly with one of them, a clawed hand on her hip. The argument was too low for Din to make out. The player the Zygerian was arguing with was an Ithorian, narrow and leathery, a translator collar fitted around his neck. None of the other players at that table would look at the Zygerian directly. Everyone was studying their cards or the bottoms of their empty Naga glasses. She stands, Din realized, sitting up a little straighter without noticing, like she usually has a blaster on her hip. Din was almost always armed. He knew that he walked like he carried a blaster, even when he didn't have one on him. He was so used to the weight of carrying one on his hip that not having one tended to make Din feel off balance, lopsided. That was how the Zygerian was standing now. Her clawed hand was curling over the spot a blaster would rest, holstered but close at hand. Now what? Din thought, does an ordinary bartender need to carry around a blaster for, often enough to get used to the weight of one? Gela's place was in a nice part of town, after all. That was relative on Tatooine. The nicest parts of Mos Eisley were worse than some of the worst slums on a planet like Naboo, but still.
"Hey, Pachi," said Iqbo the Weequay, catching Din's attention.
While Din had been studying the Zygerian, Iqbo had leaned in and was close enough that it startled Din. Din could smell him. Oil and fuel and sour boganaga. Cigar smoke. Din jerked back a little, which made Iqbo grin, flashing a silver tooth.
"You got a thing for Zygerians, Pachi?" Iqbo asked. "You're looking at Miss Jessa awful hard."
"Her name is Jessa," the hunter and Din thought, even as the rest of him scrambled to come up with a reply that would keep his cover.
"Gull," Din said, throwing out his borrowed name. He bared his teeth a little, mirroring Iqbo's unpleasant grin. Behind Iqbo's shoulder, Ono watched Din with dark eyes.
"Pachi."
"Gull, then," Iqbo said. He waved a hand. "Still didn't answer my question, Gull. Got a thing for Zygerians?"
"She tends bar, doesn't she?" Din drawled, trying to match the unbothered attitude of someone like Cobb Vanth.
Din tapped his glass, which he'd finished off a few hands ago.
"I'm out of boganaga."
"So you're staring at her instead of calling for a drink?" Iqbo remarked.
Everyone around Din's table had fallen silent, watching the exchange. Their scrutiny. All of them could see Din's face, could see his every expression, and it soured him like acid. Made him want to pull his shoulders tight to protect himself preemptively. But Gul'dun wouldn't be afraid.
"Gul'dun is just a man having a good night," Din reminded himself.
"He has no reason to be afraid of someone like Iqbo."
"She's busy," Din said, tipping his hat at the Ithorian at the other sabacc table. "Seems rude to interrupt."
Iqbo curled his lip, his cheek spikes quivering.
"Here, then, Pachi," he said. He reached out and took Din's empty glass, slow and daring, like he wanted Din to stop him. Din didn't. A Mandalorian bounty hunter might catch Iqbo's wrist, might bend or break it to teach the Weequay a lesson, to make a point to everyone else. But a smuggler coming in from a long run wouldn't.
"Say," said Iqbo. His beady eyes glittered.
"You sure you're not from around here, Gull? I gotta say, now that I've had a second look at you, you look kind of familiar."
Din almost smiled.
He's bluffing, Din thought. He'd been watching Iqbo bluff over terrible cards for most of the game. He wasn't very good at it. Even now, when he was trying to sound threatening, all Din could think was how absurd Iqbo's claim was. Din had never shown his face around Mos Eisley. He couldn't look familiar to Iqbo.
"Just got one of those faces, I guess," said Din blandly.
Iqbo studied Din for a moment, then grunted again, giving in.
"Let me buy you a drink," Iqbo said. He stood, Din's empty glass clutched in one hand, and left the table.
"Thanks," Din called after him. He heard Iqbo spit, irritated. Din turned his attention back to the table. Everyone was still looking at him, and Din hoped the lighting was dim enough that they couldn't see the way his ears colored, burning at the attention.
"What?" Din said mildly. "Are we still playing?"
Internally, he was both tenser than ever, and relieved. Iqbo had confirmed something for him. Jessa was in charge here, not Haska. That doesn't rule out Haska as the Hutt accomplice, Din thought, but it does put Jessa in the best position to be. A cantina owner would have access to speeders, too. And she moved like she was used to the weight of a blaster on her hip. The only thing that doesn't make sense, Din thought, is that she's never been to the palace. Or if she has been, I haven't seen her. I'm not there all the time. She could have gone when I wasn't around. Or someone inside the palace is helping her, but...
But Fennec had told Din to listen to his instincts, and his instincts had pointed him to Jessa like a trail of blood in the desert led an Anuba to its prey.
Iqbo looks to her, protects her. Everyone at that other sabacc table knows she's in charge, too. Jessa must have been the bartender that Siolo had recognized. Only Siolo must have seen her behind the bar and thought her just an employee, not someone who ran the place, even if Jessa ran it from behind the scenes. Fennec'll want to know, Din thought. He had a name now, a direction to run off in. He could collect what was left of his pile of credits, drink his second boganaga, and disappear before anyone else got too suspicious.
Or, he thought, focusing his attention back on his table mates, I can try to find out a little more. There was still plenty of the cantina Din hadn't explored yet. Setting Fennec loose on Jasa would yield results eventually, if any were to be found. But if Din could stop Jasa now, or at least find proof that she was Gorga's accomplice, I can buy us more time to get ready, Din thought. He wasn't an idiot. He knew that Gorga's entire plan likely didn't rest on any one accomplice. Gorga was going to attack again, and he was going to come at Boba even harder than he had before. But if Din could buy them more time to prepare, then all of this is definitely worth it, he thought. Mind made up, Din only smiled politely at Iqbo when he returned with another glass of Bogonaga and a scowl on his face. He played another few hands of Sabacc, steadily losing more and more credits, finishing his drink while he finished the card game. When Evie took the last hand pot and the entire Sabacc pot with a triumphant shout, Din only groaned about his bad luck, smiled at Evie, and made some noise about going to find the head. Din felt Iqbo's eyes on his back as he walked away, but Din swayed his steps a little like a man who'd had a bit to drink and slipped out of Iqbo's line of sight quickly enough. The cantina's freshers were around the corner from the bar, halfway down a hall that was lined with more relish decorations. These ones all folk-style artworks, wrought in brass or bronze. Twi'lek bodies, long curls of bronze representing their swaying leku, and five big dented discs, each carved with separate, distinct patterns, carved with symbols to represent Ryloth's five moons. Din counted them as he went past. The twins, Anglie and Angela, the forested Angiri, the desert Angari, and the smallest moon, the ocean moon of Angida. Din was heading southeast, not southwest, but he knew that he'd pass out of Fennec's line of sight soon. Sorry, Fennec, he thought. I'll be quick. He'd left the main room of Gela's pretty rowdy. The crowd inside had only swelled as the night had gone on, leaving both Haska and Jasa busy slinging drinks. The music had grown louder, as had the conversation around the bar. As good a time as any to check and see what's upstairs, Din thought. He did duck into the fresher perfunctorily, in case Iqbo was still watching him. Din locked the door behind himself and took a look at his face in the fresher's scratched mirror. Gul'dun, Din thought, studying his reflection, could use a nap. It was easier to look at his bare face, his armorless body, with his borrowed name, and the few drinks Din had had, in between who Din knew that he was and who he was pretending to be. The smuggler's clothes that had hung awkwardly on Din Djarin fit Gul'dun well enough. Gul'dun had Din Djarin's untidy hair, his dark eyes, the scar across the bridge of his nose. But all of that, Din thought, suited someone like Gul'dun. When Din had first come to Tatooine after Boba had called for him, Din had thought about what it would be like to leave his armor behind like he was supposed to. Who Din would have become. I don't think I would have become a smuggler, Din thought, meeting his own eyes in the mirror. The glass was warped a little, and the effect made Din's reflection uneven, not quite right. But someone like this, maybe. Someone who did odd jobs here and there, who drifted from place to place. Gul'dun was a decent enough person to be for a night, Din thought, but I don't think I'd want to be him forever. Still, the idea that Din could be him, that Din could be without the armor, could still be useful without his armor, was emboldening. Boba had said before that Din's armor had never been what Boba'd needed from Din, but it had been hard to believe him. A Mandalorian was their armor, or was supposed to be their armor. But Boba didn't need a Mandalorian, Din thought, studying his face in the mirror for another second before finally looking away. Boba needed me. A Mandalorian wouldn't have been able to come into Gela's place and play a hand of Sabacc, wouldn't have been able to learn, even by accident, that Jasa was the one in charge. No one would have trusted a Mandalorian enough to play cards with him. That realization sat oddly in Din's chest. He didn't quite know what to do with it. I'm sure Boba will have an idea or two for what to do with it, Din thought. He left the mirror and padded back to the fresher door, which was still locked. Din arranged himself so that his feet and his shadow couldn't be seen underneath the gap at the bottom of the door and pressed an ear to the wall, listening hard. He didn't hear anything but the faint ringing in his own ears. Cautiously, Din unlocked the fresher door and cracked it open an inch, peering down the hall towards the cantina's main room. No one was in the hall, and Din didn't see either Iqbo or his brother Ono looming, so he opened the door a little wider and looked the other way. The opposite end of the hall turned into a set of stairs leading up to the second floor. There was a chain strung across the stairs, a sign pinned across it with clumsy handwritten letters warning Din to keep out, and the stairs went up into shadow. Din couldn't see the top of them. There was also another door near the stairs, and, unlike the fresher, it was locked with some kind of keypad. Din frowned, his instinct singing faintly. He leaned forward. A flash of movement caught his eye, reflected in the big brass discs that represented Ryloth's moons, and Din jerked back, pulling his head into the safety of the fresher. He didn't slam the door, not wanting to alert whoever or whatever was moving. Through the crack in the door, Din watched the brass discs. Whoever was moving, and it was a sentient, Din thought, though the discs hadn't been polished in a while and the reflection in them was indistinct, just a mass of shadow, was coming from the stairs, not the cantina's main room. Din watched as the shape froze. Din caught his breath. "I'm not here," he thought, locking every muscle in his body. He didn't want the door to shake or rattle and give him away. The noise coming from the main room was loud enough to hopefully drown out Din's heartbeat or his breath, in case whoever was coming down the stairs had sharper senses than a human. But if Din moved, he'd give himself away. "I'm not here," Din thought. "No one's here." After several seconds, the shape reflected in the brass discs moved again. The shape shifted, coming closer, to the bottom of the stairs, Din thought. But instead of coming down the hallway past the fresher and into the main room again, the shape paused again, reflection shifting oddly. There was a faint hissing sound in the hall. A pop, the almost inaudible sound of a door opening, hinges creaking. And then the shape disappeared entirely. There was nothing in the hall to reflect back on the discs. The figure, whoever or whatever they were, was gone. "Into the other room," Din thought, eyes wide. The hooded figure. Din couldn't have said what it was that made him think of that being, the humanoid who'd sat alone in Fennec's blind spot and nursed a glass of spatchka, but he knew that they had to be the one sneaking around. No one else, Jassa or Iqbo or even Haska, who worked here, would creep around like that. "So what's this person doing?" Fennec wasn't the type to have two operations running at the same time. She wouldn't run Din and someone else out of the same spot, not together, or at least not without telling Din. "So what?" Din thought, still frozen with his hand on the fresher door. "There's someone else here looking into Gala's place. Who?" Sense told Din to leave it, to go back into the main room, make a very public exit, and get out of Gala's place before whoever else was sneaking around here got caught. But instinct told Din to follow them. "Whoever's here probably isn't Jassa's friend," Din thought. "They could be a Hutt ally, could even be the Hutt ally who took those speeders out to the jungle and wastes, who's been feeding Gorga information on the palace, on the people in it. But why would a Hutt ally sneak around a cantina like this? Gela's place wasn't openly affiliated with the Hutts, not like Bubiska had been, but it wasn't one of Boba's operations either. I can take a quick look," Din thought, his curiosity mounting. "And then I can leave. It's not like I'm going to get lost. I have my fob on me. Fennec still knows where I am." She'd be angry that Din had left her line of sight for so long, but she'd live. Mind made up, Din waited for almost a minute, listening intently, then ducked out behind his door. No one came as he crossed the short hallway, opened the other door, and slid inside. The keypad was broken, sparking faintly, which confirmed Din's theory. Whoever had come from the second floor was not working with Jassa. This door opened onto a narrow, cramped stairway. The stairs were hewn directly into the bedrock of Mos Eisley, smooth with age, and led down into the darkness. Too narrow for a Hutt, Din thought, letting the door close behind him. The darkness that fell was immediate and absolute, but Din didn't mind. He steadied himself against the wall and took a few cautious steps down the stairs. Din's other senses expanded in the darkness. He could hear the noise of the cantina above him beyond the door, faint music, muffled voices. He could smell the stairway, cool and musty, the scent of old rock. And he could feel air moving through the space, brushing against his bare skin. There's another door down here somewhere, Din thought. There had to be to get movement in the air. Emboldened, Din felt his way deeper into the tunnel-like stairway, keeping a hand on the wall to help himself stay upright. The stairs didn't lead him too deeply underground. Din went down 12 or 13 steps, towing his way down each one carefully so he didn't fall on his face and alert the whole cantina, and then found himself on more or less even footing. He was standing on stone, and the stone was smooth. Farther ahead, maybe 40 feet away, Din saw a very faint strip of light close to the ground. The air that whispered against him came from that direction. Another door, Din thought. He listened hard for a few minutes, trying to hear past the faint ringing in his ears, the familiar sounds of his own breath, his own heart, and heard nothing. He hoped that meant that the hooded figure had gone ahead. Keeping a hand on the wall, Din felt his way towards the strip of light, which brightened as he got closer. The texture of the wall didn't change. It was one smooth sheet of stone, a tunnel cut out of the bedrock itself. A smuggler's tunnel, if I had to guess, Din thought. Gellis Place was right across the street from the shipyards. A tunnel here would give anyone moving illegal goods an easy way to get back and forth without catching the attention of the shipyard bosses. The stone felt old, worn so smooth it was nearly textureless. If I had to guess, Din thought, I'd say that this tunnel was the reason someone else took over Gellis Place. Digging a tunnel was loud and difficult. Using a tunnel that was already cut into the rock, though, easy. All they had to do was take Gella out of the equation. Din thought of Gella. She had Gita's face in his mind's eye because Din knew Gita. Being forced down this tunnel at Blaster Point, her life's dream snatched away because it saved someone else a few credits, and his heart twisted. Din made himself set it aside. There was nothing he could do for Gella now. She was probably long dead. Well, he thought, if it was Haska or Jassa, I can turn them over to Boba, and Boba will give out his justice. That was an encouraging idea. Din finally reached the door, brushing his fingers against it. The door was metal and cold. Touching it shocked him. Din felt around for a knob or a handle, and found that the hinges of the door had been cut. The door was propped up against its frame. The hooded figure, he wondered. He felt at the cuts across the hinges. They were warm and clean, like they had been cut with a high-intensity vibroknife or something similar. Din could taste burnt carbon and melted metal in the air. Odd, Din thought. He hadn't decided yet who he thought the hooded figure was, but if they'd cut the hinges to get through the door... They're definitely not with Jassa, Din thought. Does that make them Narudad, the enemy of my enemy? Every sense on high alert, Din curled his fingers around the edges of the door and shifted it aside, lifting it a bit so it didn't scrape against the ground and make noise. It was easy enough to lift, though Din's shoulders protested a bit at the strain, and beyond the door was a larger room filled with dim light. Din set the door down, stepped inside, and then carefully shifted the door back into place behind him, blinking to let his eyes adjust. After the darkness of the stairways and the tunnel, even the dim light of this room took some adjusting to. Din blinked rapidly, squinting, as the space resolved itself. It was less a room and more a cave. It was very, very old. The walls were all a dark red band of sandstone, roughly shaped by time and ancient water. The floor was pocked and pitted. Light cells had been rigged against the rightmost wall, which was gently rounded, and thick cables ran between the light cells. The cables vanished into the wall through a roughly drilled hole near the ceiling, which bristled with stalactites like a great stone mouth. Din searched it briefly for anything dangerous, like an animal or a video feed, but didn't see anything except deep shadows, and continued his quick study of the cave. On the far wall, opposite Din, there was another metal door. That one looked intact, but the light cells were too weak for Din to see it properly. The entire left half of the cave was deep in shadow. Din could make out a few vague shapes, stalagmites, he was pretty sure, since they were too still to belong to living beings, and the vague outlines of something hanging off the left wall. There was no sign of the hooded humanoid. Din drew his blaster just in case, prowling warily into the cave. He almost wanted to draw the darksaber to cast a little bit more light, but the darksaber wasn't quiet, and it'd be hard to explain away if Din found himself surprised by Haska or Jassa. Though, he thought, his eyes adjusting to the deeper gloom past the faint glow of the light cells. All of this is going to be pretty hard to explain if I'm caught. The cut hinges on the door, the blaster in his hand, what Din was even doing down here in the first place, when he was supposed to be the ordinary smuggler Gul'dun and not Boba Fett's hunter. Din got close enough to the left wall to see what was hanging on it, spaced every 4 or 5 feet, and his heart sank. Chains. The cave underneath Gallus Place was full of chains. The metal of them was dark but free of rust. They were bolted into the wall of the cave itself, lengths of 5 or 6 feet, and when Din reached out and touched the nearest chain, he saw that the metal was faintly discolored, patches of it darker than the others. His heart sank further. Blood, he thought. There was no way to tell how recently the chains had been used, but Din gave his chain an experimental tug. It wasn't old enough to pop out of the wall. I think I know what happened to Gala, Din thought. He thought he knew what was happening here in its entirety, actually. Zygeria was, after all, an empire built on the backs of slaves. Jassa's moving slaves through here, Din thought, pacing down the length of the wall. His stomach churned with cold fury. The cave was big enough to hold as many as 20 captives at a time. He'd bet every last credit he had in his pockets that the other door opened into a tunnel underneath the street, to a back bay or a private landing pad where a ship could slip on and off planet without attracting too much attention. Even if Jassa's not Gorga's accomplice, she's a slaver, Din thought. And Boba said that slaving is illegal now, and even if he hadn't, it's not right, so... Din didn't get to finish that thought. The hairs on the back of his neck lifted. His instinct screamed one sharp warning, the feeling clanging through Din like struck Beskar. And moving on instinct, he dove. He wasn't fast enough. An arm, strong and strangling like an anaconda, wrapped around Din's throat. His blaster clattered to the cave floor. "Easy now," said a male voice in Din's ear, low and soothing. He could feel someone tall and powerfully built behind him, pulling Din closer by the arm around his throat. Din wheezed. "Don't do anything stupid, okay?" "Cark that," Din thought, instinct still roaring, and planted an elbow as hard as he could into the mass behind him. He connected with something, breath rushed past his ear in a great gust, punctuated by a startled oof. Din repeated the motion again, driving back as hard as he could, using the half-inch of freedom he'd won for himself to twist hard and stomp at his attacker's instep. Din's attacker was wearing boots, but not Mandalorian-made boots. Mandalorian boots had Beskar. Not much, especially for a hunter like Din, who needed to move quickly and often quietly, but he had Beskar capping his toes, Beskar in his heels. Din's foot connected, and his attacker choked on a shout, the arm across Din's neck going slack. Din broke the hold and bolted, trying to put as much space between himself and his assailant as possible. He fumbled with the unfamiliar lines of his vest, groping around for the darksaber. He just needed the room to turn around. Something that could only be described as a force, a great invisible hand, caught Din in a terrible grip. He jerked to a stop mid-step. The air around him compressed. It was like the air itself had turned to stone, trapping Din inside. He could still feel the strain in his muscles, his leg pulling as it tried to step, his arms straining as they tried to drag the darksaber free. But Din couldn't move at all. A wave of animal terror crashed over him. Din fought, tried to twist, to tear himself away from whatever it was that had caught him, but he couldn't move. He couldn't move. He didn't understand what was happening, and he couldn't move. Whatever it was that had caught Din like a ship in a tractor beam let him go all at once. Din stumbled forward, heaving, and finally managed to get a good grip on the darksaber. Din turned, drawing the blade in a smooth, practiced motion, and set his thumb on the ignition switch. "Are you crazy?" Din's attacker hissed, suddenly there, catching Din's wrist in a crushing grip. "You're gonna get us both killed." The attacker's hood had fallen back. Din found himself facing the hooded and cloaked figure from the corner of the cantina. With the hood back, Din saw that his attacker was human, or at least near human, and male. He had dark skin and long black hair. A faded band of yellow ink was tattooed across the man's face, marking him as a highly ranked Kifar, and Din knew him. Din had met him before.
"Quinlan Vos?" Din asked.
The Kifar's, the Jedi's, expression cleared. "I do know you," Vos said. "You're the Mandalorian." Still shocked, Din could only nod. He'd last seen Vos on Yavin 4 with the rest of the Jedi. Din hadn't had much to do with him. Vos had taught a few of the younglings lessons, but Din had gotten the impression that Vos preferred to spend his time elsewhere. One of the other Jedi, Kestis, had told Din that being around the Academy was hard for some of the Jedi who'd survived the purges. Din had assumed that Vos was one of those Jedi.
"Grogu's father."
Din nodded again, eyes wide. "He only saw me in my armor," Din realized. Vos had never seen Din's face. Din had taken his helmet off for Luke Skywalker, had taken it off on the fly so Grogu could get to know Din without it on, but he'd always worn his helmet when he'd been around the other younglings, the adult Jedi.
"What are you doing here?" Vos asked, letting go of Din's wrist.
"It's not safe. And where did you get a lightsaber?" Din swallowed, struggling to get his thoughts in order. Vos's appearance had thrown him badly.
"It's not a lightsaber," he managed. "It's Mandalorian. Mine."
"And I could ask you the same thing. What's a Jedi doing in Mos Eisley?"
"I live here. I'm on a job."
Vos's expression cleared a bit, though he still cast a doubtful look at the darksaber. He let Din go, finally, and Din let his arm fall limp. He curled his fingers over the darksaber's hilt. The familiar grooves cut into the metal reassured him.
"I'm on a job, too," Vos said.
"Here?" Vos shrugged.
"What kind of job are you on?" Din asked wearily.
He reached up and rubbed at his throat. Vos hadn't heard him, not really. He'd just surprised Din, that was all. Quinlan Vos looked Din up and down, taking in Din's lack of armor, his old faded clothes.
"Same kind of job as you, I think.
You Mandos go undercover often?" Din grimaced.
"No," he said.
He paused. Din didn't know Quinlan Vos, not really. A handful of shared meals in the temples of Yavin didn't mean that they knew each other, that Vos could be trusted. But something pulled at Din.
"What did Fennec say to me?" he wondered, reaching back through his memory. "There's probably less than 50 Jedi still alive across the entire galaxy," she'd said weeks ago, when Din had come in from the desert after he and Boba had fought about Din being a Mandalorian or not, and told her that Boba had found him in the sands.
"Found me when he wasn't looking for me," Din remembered. Fennec had been talking about Luke Skywalker, how he'd appeared on the light cruiser just moments before they'd all be killed.
"But one shows up the moment we need one the most," Fennec had said. She'd seemed to think that Din had something to do with it, that the Jedi had come because of him. Skywalker had come because of Grogu.
"But she's right. At least a little," Din thought. His skin prickled again. "Things like that have been happening around me." Din had never been to Gela's place before. He hadn't known about it at all until Siolo had told him. Wouldn't have ever thought to look here if he'd walked past it in the street. That Din had come here on a job the same night as one of the last Jedi left in the galaxy was ridiculous. Unbelievable.
"Unless we're after the same thing."
The thought jolted through him. Din took a breath and threw his trust out into the universe.
"I," said Din, "am hunting Hutts. What are you doing here?"
Vos's expression sharpened even further, like a Masif catching a scent.
"Hunting slavers," he said, "which are usually Hutts in these parts."
"Slavers," Din said slowly. An idea was opening in his mind, like the Jedi holocron had opened when Din had finally found the right corner to twist.
"Why?"
Vos grimaced, and even though they were alone, he lowered his voice.
"You know what I do for the Academy, right?"
Din shrugged.
"Not really," he admitted.
"An Academy's not an Academy without students," said Vos.
"And there are Force-sensitive children born in the galaxy every day. A lot of them have families who know the signs, who know what it means to have a Force-sensitive child these days. Who look after them, keep them safe."
But a lot of kids don't. Din's blood froze. Like Grogu, he said almost involuntarily. Grogu hadn't had anyone looking after him until Din had found him. Until after that, even. Din had given Grogu up at first, turned him into the remnants, let Pershing run his tests, take Grogu's blood. But before that, Grogu had been... He'd been treated like little more than an object from what Din could gather. A thing to be fought over. A resource. But he was a child. Din thought of the other children at Skywalker's Jedi School. Yulia, the happy Marilyn, the Zabrak twins, the little Togruta with the gap between her two front teeth, the trio of humans that were as close as blood siblings. Din thought of those kids, any of those kids, in the chains hanging from the cave's wall and had to look away, stomach twisting. He clutched the darksaber so tightly that the joints in his hand cracked. Is there a market for Jedi children? Din asked hoarsely. Voss regarded Din with dark, solemn eyes. There's a market for everything, he said. You know that, Mandalorian. Your people are prized down in Haxian brood fighting pits. Din set his jaw. He knew that. He couldn't help but think of Paz's kids, Kieran and Took and Myrta. What would happen to them if a slaver caught them? There's less interest in Force-sensitive children now, said Voss softly. The Emperor, he used to pay quite a bit for Force-sensitive kids. None of the Moffs fighting over what's left of his throne will pay half as much. I thought the Emperor killed all of the Jedi, Din said, dragging his thoughts back to Voss with some effort. He frowned a little. Being Force-sensitive doesn't make someone a Jedi, said Voss. Just like carrying around a hunk of Beskar doesn't mean that whoever holds it is a Mandalorian. What do you know about being Mandalorian? Din asked. He didn't mean it as an attack, though he was still so unsettled by Voss's appearance, by what Voss's appearance meant, that the words landed more sharply than Din meant them to. Voss didn't seem to mind. He even smiled faintly, his teeth bright in the gloom. Me, not much, he said. I had a friend back before the Clone Wars who, well, he knew a lot more. Spent a fair bit of time among your people. He told me some of it. Voss's smile faded. The Emperor hated Jedi, Voss continued. But a Force-sensitive child who'd never heard of the Jedi before, who hadn't been trained as a Jedi. Now that the Emperor could find a use for. Din's stomach turned over again. You're saying there's Force-sensitive kids here on Tatooine, Din said. That the huts are selling. Voss shrugged with one shoulder, face tight. Yes, Din realized, searching Voss's expression. Yes, that's exactly what he's saying. Fury burned in his belly. I'll kill them, he thought. A slaver, someone who hunted down Jedi kids. That made them Din's enemy twice over. That this being was probably also Gorga's accomplice just put another target on their back as far as Din was concerned. I got a report, Voss finally said, studying Din's face intently. A call for help, let's call it, involving a kid with signs of Force sensitivity. That kid's since gone missing. I did some asking around. Voss wiggled his fingers a little, which Din didn't understand. And it turns out a lot of people go missing around here. What brought you to Gela's? Din asked, frowning. I heard... We're looking for a hut sympathizer, Din said. Someone who'd have an interest in putting a hut back in power. Someone willing to do a bit of legwork to make that happen. I don't know about legwork, said Voss, but the cantina's owner, Jossa the Zygerian, has been running slaves out of Tatooine for 20 years. She's the owner? Din pressed. He wanted to be sure. Jossa had been running drinks on the floor. Cantina owners never bothered with customer service. Voss nodded. As far as I can tell, anyway, he said. She never filed ownership of the cantina with the city, but this is Tatooine. Din grimaced. This was Tatooine. Things, even cantinas, changed hands all the time and very rarely changed hands legally. Jasa took the cantina from Gela, Din thought, fitting the pieces together, so she could use the tunnel, this cave, to move people around without anyone catching on. "Are you sure it's Jasa?" Din asked again, already making plans to, he didn't know, storm the cantina with Fennec and Kasik, maybe Boba too, if Boba felt like he could leave the palace for a few hours. Altogether, they'd make short work of Jasa and anyone she threw at them. Kark, Din thought, if Voss is half as good with the lightsaber as Skywalker, he and I could take the cantina together between us. Voss must have a lightsaber on him. That was probably what he'd used to saw through the door back down the hallway. Pretty sure, yeah, Voss said. Before I came down here, I went upstairs. There's a second floor. I know, said Din. I saw you. Voss startled, peering at Din more intently. You saw me? Din nodded. In the brass discs on the wall, he explained. Your reflection, I saw you moving. I was in the fresher. Really? I didn't sense you. That made Din's skin prickle uncomfortably. Sense me? He said. Voss waved a hand. It's a Jedi thing, he said. If we concentrate, we can usually feel other life forms in the Force. The Force is around us, all of us. A trained Jedi can pull on that. But it's harder in crowded places. Din eyed Voss again, unsettled. Jedi could sense life forms. It sounded fantastical, like something out of a story. But I saw Grogu heal deadly wounds without touching them, Din thought, remembering Greef Karga. I saw him lift the mudhorn. Sensing another life form it's not that weird, I guess. I'm unobtrusive when I need to be, Din said, gesturing at his clothes. Voss snorted. Fair enough, he said. What are you tonight, some kind of smuggler? Din nodded. You? Mysterious outlander, Voss said. Who doesn't speak basic, by the way, so if we're caught down here, I'm gonna start shouting at you in Kefar. I don't know any Kefar, Din said, so it should be convincing. Voss cracked a grin, and it made him look years younger. He didn't look old, exactly. He was older than Din and carried some years in his face, but aside from his faded tattoo and some gray threaded through his hair, he didn't look much older than 50. But when he grinned, those years fell away, and Din found himself rather liking that smiling Jedi. He had bright eyes and mischief in his face. As I was saying, Voss continued, I went upstairs. Jasa kept records, and sloppily encrypted ones at that. Manifests, names, buyers, sellers. She's some Zagirian ambassador. Works for the Empire. The Zagirian Empire, I mean. I've run into similar operations before. The ambassadors set up shop along the Sour Lanes, get in good with the local government, start buying and moving slaves at cheap prices. We're the government here, Din said, frowning. Or Boba Fett is the government here. Voss's smile faded. You work for Boba Fett. Din shrugged a little. I'm with him, he said. Yes. Voss eyed Din right back. I hear, he said, that Boba Fett's outlawed slavery on Tatooine. Din nodded. He did, he said. Why? You'd have to ask him that, said Din. But he and I don't freight with it. If Jasa's slaving, who's she doing it for? It's not us. She had a contract under some Slimo called Fortuna, Voss said. That was the name on the records, anyway. Know who that is? Din's heart leapt. He felt like the Nexu who'd finally, after a long hunt, sunk its claws into its prey. Got her, he thought. The former government, Din said. He was a Twi'lek, worked under Jabba for years, then took over for a while when Jabba died. Former? He's dead, said Din, with some satisfaction. He couldn't say that he'd ever met Bib Fortuna, but Din knew enough about him to know that he would not have cared much for Fortuna at all. Fortuna, he thought, was the kind of Slimo who'd sell a Force-sensitive child to the Empire. The kind who wouldn't go back and free that child when he'd realized that he made a mistake. Easy enough, then, said Voss. Joss has been here for years, if the records are accurate. I'd hope they'd be, since she'd kept them, but you never know in this line of work. You do a lot of whisper work? Din asked, using Fennec's usual term. Voss smiled faintly. We called it Shadow's work during the Clone Wars, he said. He spread his hands. I'm good at it. And Skywalker needs a shadow, even if he doesn't want one. The galaxy still, I don't know, doesn't seem much different than it was during the Clone Wars, if I'm being honest. The galaxy had been the same for Din as long as he'd known it. The Outer Rim was the Outer Rim. The Sarlanes were the Sarlanes. She probably had that deal with Bib Fortuna on behalf of the Hutts, Din muttered, thinking hard. The pieces were all falling into place now. Fennec and Boba had been searching for a spy in their own ranks, but they should have been looking here, looking for beings who'd made their clank on the Sarra trade, who'd found their preferred livelihood disrupted when Boba had come and made his decree. We know, or we can guess anyway, that Bib Fortuna had a deal with the Hutts, probably with Gorga in particular. He was losing too much money. Gorga was, what, propping Fortuna up, paying down on some of his debt? To get Fortuna in deeper so Gorga could slither in without much effort or expense and acquire Jabba's empire for a fraction of what it had been worth when Jabba ruled. And Fortuna, Din thought, following that chain, the bits and ends of information he'd collected slowly over the course of weeks and months, has always made credits quickly, ruining lives. The Sarra trade's always been here on Tatooine, always been an easy way to get a few credits. But Boba put a stop to it, or has tried to put a stop to it, and everyone who had the run of Tatooine, who could do whatever they wanted under Fortuna, is angry about it. Someone like Jossa's got a vested interest in getting Boba out and Gorga in. It fit. The only piece that was still missing was how Jossa had gotten information about the palace. Who Din was to Boba, who Ushib was, and how she was important, when Boba held court. But Fennec had told Din weeks ago that there were plenty of spies in the palace. Any one of them could have passed that information on to Jossa. Think she's your Hutt contact? Voss asked, studying Din. Din nodded slowly. I think she's involved, anyway. I think she's a better lead than we've been able to find. What's your Boba Fett gonna do to her? Voss's eyes were sharp. Not let her keep kidnapping kids, if that's what you're asking, Din returned a little coolly. Voss just shrugged. He killed the last Sigerian slaver we caught on his turf, said Din. This one, even if she isn't working for Gorga, she's breaking Boba's law. He'll put a stop to it. If she is Gorga's accomplice, well, then she's helped Gorga kill some of our people, and she won't leave the palace alive. Voss studied Din for a moment. Then he nodded. Din blinked a little surprised. You're okay with that? Din asked. You don't want her arrested, brought to the New Republic? Sure, if you'll give her up, said Voss. He shrugged. But if you won't, I'd rather just see her stopped. Din blinked again. Voss's smile was a little bitter now. The younger man, full of mischief, was gone. That surprises you, he said. It does, Din admitted. He rubbed the back of his neck a little sheepish. It's not what I expected from a Jedi. Voss snorted. It's not what the old council would do, no. Not openly, anyway, he said. It's probably not even what Skywalker would do. That kid's got a good heart to him. He wants to do things right. And I respect that, I do. But I have been more than a Jedi, Mandalorian. Voss looked Din up and down. His expression softened. And less. The galaxy's not always the way I'd like it to be. I can live with that. Din nodded. He understood. And anyway, I was going to ask. I want to talk to Jossa before we turn her over to Fett. Yes, I'll help you grab her, Voss added when Din opened his mouth. Din raised his eyebrows. What? Said Voss. I don't trust you exactly, Mandalorian. Your people, you're loyal, but you're not loyal to the things that a Jedi easily understands, even one like me. That drew a snort out of Din, too. My name's Din, he said. Voss rolled his eyes. Quinlan, he said. I don't trust you, really, but I trust that you'll work in Fett's interest, right? I will, Din allowed. He hesitated, then said. And the Jedi's, too. if I can. My son is... Grogu will be a Jedi, and I don't like slavers, Din said. I believe you, Voss, Quinlan said. I'll help you deal with this one. I just want to talk to her first, before you hand her over to Fett. Why? Din asked. He didn't see why he wouldn't agree, especially if Quinlan helped him take Jossa down right now, but he wanted to know the Jedi's reasoning. I need to know where she sold her last batch of captives, Voss said, his tone very serious. I've only been on planet a few days. She made her last sale over a week ago and the trail's gone cold. That's what I was looking for upstairs. But she didn't have a name or even a planet. The kid I'm looking for, he's in that last batch. That was a good reason to want to talk to Jossa. Din looked Quinlan in the eye. Quinlan looked back steadily. I think he's telling the truth, Din thought. Boba wouldn't mind. Boba didn't like the idea of kids in harm's way any more than Din did. All right, Din said. Yes, you can talk to Jossa first. I don't know what she'll tell you, but... He broke off. The hairs on the back of Din's neck lifted. His grip tightened, almost involuntarily, on the darksaber. Quinlan looked away too, looking down the cave-like room towards the door he'd cut, the door they'd both come through. Quinlan's hand dropped to his hip.
What's... Din started.
I know, said Quinlan. I feel it too. Get behind me, Mandalorian. Someone's... He didn't get to finish. The door, its hinges already cut, blew inward with tremendous force, followed by something small that blinked and hissed. The object hit the ground, bounced, and rolled to a stop in front of Quinlan. Din blinked, thrown. He felt like he'd stepped a week into the past. He felt like he was in Boba's throne room again, watching a grenade clatter down the steps to land in front of Boba's throne. Instinct saved Din's life, and it saved Quinlan Voss's too.
Voss! Din shouted, reaching out. Get down!
Din's fingers found the back of Voss's hood. Voss was already moving towards the door, reaching across his hip to push the folds of his cloak aside, revealing a slim cylinder of dark metal, a lightsaber. Din caught him, held fast, and pulled.